So an entrepreneurial mindset is where you see yourself as a one-stop shop and you take the initiative and you take the lead in the cases that you're working on. The fact that you're junior cannot be an excuse for not knowing how to do things. If you don't know how to do things, ask, figure how to get things done.
Hello everyone and welcome to the Student Lawyer Podcast Series. Whether you're at school, sixth form, university, thinking about a career in law, or exploring law careers, you're in the right place. We are the one-stop shop for student lawyers. If you'd like to join the Student Lawyer as a writer, please email hello@thestudentlawyer.com. This episode is sponsored by the University of Law. The University of Law offers a range of undergraduate and postgraduate courses and master's degrees alongside an award-winning pro bono clinic so you can build up your legal experience while studying. And their experienced career service will enable you to put your best foot forward when launching your legal career. The courses are employment focused and based on real legal practice so you'll be better prepared for the workplace. Part-time and online study options are available so you can work and study at the same time. Click the link in the description box of the podcast to find out more about the courses on offer. Welcome to the Student Lawyer Podcast Series. My name's Camilla. I'm a trainee solicitor and I'm going to be your host for today. In today's episode, we're joined by Tanya Singler, an international arbitration lawyer with experience in Europe with complex and multi-jurisdictional disputes. Tanya is licensed to practice in both India and England and Wales, and she regularly teaches courses on international arbitration and for skills such as legal writing and research. I first became aware of Tanya when I began reading her LinkedIn series titled What Your Partner Wants You to Know, which is very successful on LinkedIn and for good reason because each post contains valuable tips on how to become a better lawyer and a better team member. And so I had to invite Tanya onto the Student Lawyer Podcast to share some of her fantastic tips, which she does in bucket loads during this interview. So make sure you stick around to hear all of them. And without further ado, let's welcome Tanya onto the Student Lawyer Podcast.
Thank you so much for having me, Camilla. I'm a huge fan of the podcast and it's wonderful to be here.
Oh, you're so kind. Thank you so much. Please, could you provide the listeners with an overview of your career to date?
Sure. So as the listeners probably know, my name is Tanya Singler and I'm a dual qualified lawyer with rights to practice in India and England and Wales. For the past 5 years, I have been representing and advising states as well as companies in international arbitrations across the world. My practice ranges across a variety of sectors, including energy, infrastructure, financial services, and insurance. And out of these 5 years, I've spent more than 3.5 years at White & Case in Paris, where I was a member of their arbitration practice until very recently. A couple of months ago, I decided to, you know, take some time off and then focus on a personal project that I will be sharing details with, you know, people on LinkedIn in a couple of months. But to that point, I also write a series on LinkedIn, which is known as What Your Partner Wants You to Know, where I share tips for junior associates and trainees on how they can navigate their lives, their professional lives in their law firms. And in addition, I love teaching. So I also regularly teach courses on arbitration, and that includes as well as legal skills. So that would be legal writing and research as well. I hope that gives you an overview of what my profile looks like.
It does. It does. All I can say is you must be a time management expert because it sounds like you do so much. That's really exciting.
You have to be being in the law.
That's very true. Yeah. That's absolutely fascinating. And, you know, I've seen your series on LinkedIn, What Your Partner Wants You to Know. And the tips are just fantastic. And I'm going to definitely be asking you a few questions about that later on in the podcast. But before we get into that, your career in international arbitration sounds fascinating. And I just wondered what made you decide to pursue a career in that area?
So that's actually a funny story. When I was in law school, I initially decided to specialize in intellectual property. I absolutely loved that world. I was so fascinated by trademarks and design and patents and all of that. And I was doing that for a couple of years until I ended up doing an internship in what the practice of intellectual property looks like. And I hated it. I absolutely hated it. And it so happened that that semester, I was signed up for an intellectual property moot. And for whatever reason, that didn't work out. And I ended up with an arbitration moot. And I had no clue what arbitration is about. So it's a moot is essentially a moot court competition where, you know, you practice your skills of advocacy with a problem that you're provided. And it's usually a legal problem. So my problem was focused on arbitration. And I really think it was love at first brief. And that's how arbitration worked out for me, because I absolutely loved how much space there was for you to be creative, how much space there was for you to actively solve problems, and how much space there was for you to be international as well. And that is a very interesting combination that appealed to me back in law school. And towards the end of my law school, I took that unconventional decision to not sit for placements, and I decided to apply for LLMs abroad. And I did one LLM in Germany on a full scholarship where I focused on European law and dispute settlement. And I ended up doing the MIDS LLM in dispute settlement in Geneva. And my plan was to come back to India and practice. I was so sure that I'm going to do litigation and arbitration. But I was very lucky to receive an offer from White & Case during my internship. And my career started in Paris, has gone on for a while, and I've absolutely loved every second of it. So it's funny how things work out sometimes.
It is. You can't really plan it. You know, you thought you wanted to do IP and now look at you. And I think that just, it's really goes to show that people should try and stay. I know it's hard, but try to stay open-minded as you go through your career, because you never know what you're going to enjoy doing, and you never know where you'll end up. So I guess the lesson from that is maybe get involved in mooting if you haven't done it before, because then you might find that you actually love doing arbitration or working in that sort
and
of
And I just add a little something to that, right? I think you should also give yourself the space and the grace to experiment a little bit in law school, because it is such an early and an amazing stage of your legal career where you have so many options that are open to you. And I think being able to, you know, land in places where you didn't think you would land, which is essentially my whole career, I think just giving yourself that space is so important.
Thank you. That's really good advice. That's fantastic. Thank you for sharing that. And so what led you to start your LinkedIn series, What Your Partner Wants You to Know?
That's such an amazing question, because my LinkedIn series is something that I started in October 2023, and it's been a few months, and I've absolutely loved the response that I've received. And people have been so kind in terms of the suggestions that they've sent my way and the feedback that I've received. But in terms of its origin story, I think this is honestly the first time I'm discussing it on any platform, and I'm just so glad that this is this platform. So when I started What Your Partner Wants You to Know, it was just an idea that I think had been bubbling in my mind for a couple of years. I think every junior associate who has worked in a big law firm, and I have worked in different kinds of law firms during my internships and as an associate. And there are times when you encounter senior partners who are, you know, for whatever reason, maybe a little difficult to work with, or maybe a little difficult to decode in terms of their working style. Because law firms are becoming difficult places to be in if you are maybe a first-generation lawyer or you are somebody who's fresh out of law school. So sometimes being young can mean that you are naive to a certain extent, or you're just not familiar with how things are done in your law firm. And I was one of those people. I have been one of those people, and I understand the kind of journey it takes to become somebody, you know, who is more attuned with how their organization works and how to work with different kinds of partners. And so I was reflecting on my experience where I was working with this one senior partner who I felt had these enormous expectations that I always seemed to fall short of. And I just couldn't make head or tail of it. You know, I have always done really well in my career. I'm somebody who takes my career very seriously. And suddenly I just felt like I was out of sorts, just because, you know, I didn't know how to figure this partner out, because this was somebody who would not give feedback more regularly. And even when I would receive feedback, it was so convoluted and confusing that I didn't know what to do with it. And I made it a point to teach myself how to manage up better and how to work with partners and, you know, take advice, find mentors and sponsors within the firm, find mentors outside the firm as well. And I began to realize how these little things that you might not have known actually shape your legal career. And it's funny, but I remember our partner said this to me at some point in time where he said that you spent a very small part of your career as an associate. Because after maybe 9 or 10 years of practicing it as an associate, you would be a partner. And you would have a completely different perspective of what you want from your associates, right? And so, to be very honest, it was this one experience where I felt like I was struggling. And it was, and for some reason, I didn't feel like it was that partner's fault, really. Maybe they could have made my life easier, maybe they couldn't have. But I felt like there was this gap of just information that I was dealing with, that I decided that I wanted to bridge on LinkedIn. And I didn't think that it would make an impact in the way that it did. But I'm so grateful that, you know, when I receive messages from people saying that the advice has actually helped them in their work, it makes me incredibly proud.
Well, all I can say is that I'm very happy that we got the inside scoop here at The Student Lawyer. You heard it here first. But yeah, no, that's, I mean, I think it's an amazing series, so helpful. And, you know, it's, I just love that, you know, you can share these things on social media and reach so many people. So I have no doubt that you're helping a lot of people with your series.
I'd like to take a moment to speak about the University of Law, which is the university I decided to study my LPC at. The University of Law is the sponsor of this podcast and makes it possible for us to continue bringing these episodes to you. So we really appreciate you supporting us by supporting our sponsors. What really sets the University of Law apart from other universities is its belief in training students for the real world from the moment they accept a place. The University of Law's experienced career service and award-winning pro bono clinics offer students the chance to get real-life legal experience which can boost employability. They offer a range of undergraduate and postgraduate legal training and master's degrees designed by qualified experts to help students excel at any stage of their career. Their courses are employment focused, honing key skills in a teaching environment based on real legal practice. Part-time and online study options are also available on many of their courses to help students work and study at the same time. If you'd like to find out more about the courses on offer, please click the link in the description box of the podcast.
I mean, how do you think that trainee and or junior lawyers can make a good impression and elevate their performance at work? What do you think the key ways to do that would be?
I absolutely love that question. And the reason I love that question is because so much of the advice that we see online is, you know, written for firms that were designed in maybe the 1990s or the early 2000s. But not maybe for the firms of today, where they are facing challenges in terms of, you know, the prices that they're charging their clients and the pushback that they're receiving, the kind of disputes that are coming across firms, the kind of practice areas and the demand that law firms are facing. And I think that junior associates and trainees need to be mindful of these external challenges while they're navigating their internal teams and the cases that they're working on as well. So to be very honest, I think when I think of ways in which trainees and junior associates can make a good impression, I think one of the key things that is incredibly important today is having an entrepreneurial mindset. And let me just discuss briefly what I mean by that, right? So an entrepreneurial mindset is where you see yourself as a one-stop shop who provides excellent service, where you see your partner as the client. And you take the initiative and you take the lead in the cases that you're working on. And you, the fact that you're junior cannot be an excuse for, you know, not knowing how to do things. If you don't know how to do things, ask, figure how to get things done. And I think that is what really makes you an entrepreneur, because you are focused on solutions. You are focused on action. And I love calling it a bias towards action, you know, just having that natural tendency to, instead of waiting for people to come to you, you go out there and you find a way to get it done. And partners absolutely love that. Another way I would suggest that, you know, junior associates make a good impression is always read a draft with fresh eyes before you send it. And I think it's just such a small thing, but it makes such a huge difference in your work product, because there are times where we're working at 2 a.m. on a draft and our brains are shutting down, but you want to take, you know, maybe a few minutes in the morning to review it before you send it out, because a lot of times that work is what is the impression that you're creating for the partner. And so you want to make sure that it is top notch. And in terms of, and this is my final point really, is my final suggestion is that, you know, just ensure that you have a great relationship with your support staff. I cannot tell you the number of times the support staff at my firm has saved me from absolute crisis, especially when we are preparing for hearings, when we are preparing for filings. These people are incredibly important to the work that that you do. And a lot of times I have heard, you know, that junior associates and trainees don't pay them enough attention and do not invest the time to build relationships with them. And I think those relationships can be extremely important in your practice whenever, you know, you are taking on certain tasks and when you are meeting certain deadlines. I hope that's helpful.
Very, very helpful. I am going to be listening back to this podcast and making notes, because I just want to implement everything that you said. I feel really inspired now. So thank you so much for sharing. And then maybe switching it up, what do you think the top mistakes are that trainees and junior lawyers are making?
I think that's a difficult question to answer, because I think there are so many mistakes that you can make as a trainee and a junior associate. And I found that in my practice as well. But see, speaking personally from my experience and my conversations with people at my level, I think the one common mistake that I see repeated again and again is people not investing time to understand how their organization works. And I don't just mean the politics of it, right? I also mean its functionalities in terms of where do you go if you want help? Where do you go if you are hosting a client, and knowing who can handle that at reception, just knowing the little details about client service, and also knowing how to manage up. I think that is becoming an incredibly important part of what junior associates do. Because partners have had an expanded role now for the past couple of decades, where they're also working with clients, they are reviewing your briefs, they are also handling a lot of admin work. So the area where this generally, you know, tend to not invest a lot of time in is managing their associates. They don't want to have a difficult associate on their hands to manage. So knowing how you can be effective, and there are so many amazing resources out there, my series being one of them, that can really help you sort of navigate and understand the realities of working in a law firm, that I think make a huge difference in terms of how your career progresses. And obviously, you know, you have the general standard advice that you would receive, which is do amazing work. And I think that is really important. But, you know, just thinking beyond the work on your desk and also thinking about these external aspects can be really important. The other thing I would add is, I feel like I repeat this often to my trainees, is that deadlines are often negotiable. So do not kill yourself for a deadline before you ask whether it can be negotiated or not. And there are so many times where, you know, people would assume that if a partner has given them a deadline or an associate has given them a deadline, it's written in stone. And sometimes when they give you a deadline, it's really based on, you know, their convenience of schedule. And if there is something that comes up for whatever reason you need to manage that deadline, please go ahead and ask. Maybe it will give you that extra, you know, one night of sleep that you possibly require to be your best self the very next day. But I think it is so important to be able to just have that mindset where, you know, deadlines are negotiable and all I have to do is ask. And finally, the thing that I see a lot of associates fail at is, you know, maybe just be effective at communication within teams, because when you are working with directly with a partner or a senior associate, communication is easy. All you have to do is pick up the phone or, you know, send out an email. But when you're working in slightly larger teams, that becomes hard, because maybe somebody is telling you some things, so another person is telling you another thing. And when you're a junior associate, you might just feel stuck because you don't know what to do. And I think just managing that communication extremely effectively is a part of your role, and it's important to know how to do that as well. So I think that's probably a mistake that I see or hear a lot from my conversations with other associates.
Brilliant advice. Thank you so much for sharing that, Tania. Honestly, it's just so just full of actionable tips that we can all apply. Sorry?
I'm always so surprised that there are such little simple things that we don't actively think about, but they make such a huge difference in how we are perceived and how our work is perceived as well.
Absolutely. I mean, I think just, you know, asking for that deadline to be extended just a few hours even can probably make your work quality improve, because then you won't be rushing it, as well as you seeming less stressed, plus getting that extra night of sleep if you need it. So yeah, something so simple can make, like you said, the biggest
difference. And you will be surprised, absolutely. And you would be surprised how many times associates and partners are willing to grant an extension. Because if they can, they mostly will, because they would, you know, rather have a complete and a well-done work product as opposed to something that was hastily done. Because obviously when they're reviewing it, they want to make sure that something that they received is top-notch and of the best quality that the person or the junior associate could have done.
Absolutely. And I was reading one of your posts, which I really enjoyed, and it was about shifting from a law school mindset to a professional mindset when you begin working in a law firm. Please could you explain to the listeners why this is important and how they can shift their mindset from a law school mindset to a professional mindset?
Absolutely. So when it comes to a law school mindset, what I really mean is when we are in law school, the dynamics are really different. So we are essentially students sitting in a classroom working with a professor, and irrespective of this teaching style that the professor has chosen, there is a certain amount of learning that is happening from the professor to the student. And in some ways, it's a one-way relationship. And you are turning in your assignments, you are turning in, you know, the work product that you're making, and you are expecting to receive grades on it. And so the mindset with which you look at your professor in law school is very different from how you look at your partner in law firms. One of the things I constantly hear is that partners are not investing enough in training their associates. Partners are not investing enough in helping their associates learn. And to a certain extent, it might come from willingness, but in my experience, it largely stems from just not having enough time to do that. But this whole law school mindset is what I see a lot of younger associates bring, associates who might not have worked in a setup prior to, you know, joining a law firm. So their expectation is that if we are making a mistake, then the partner would teach us. And there's this expectation of exactly that, right? That the partner would teach us or the senior associate would teach us. But I see less and less of willingness to do that in law firms today because they just don't have the time. And so when they receive a work product or when they have asked you to execute something, they want you to get it done and they want you to figure it out because it's no longer a one-way relationship the way you would have with your professor, where you would definitely get feedback or you would get grades. But this is where you are expected to provide professional services. And that is why thinking about your partner can be really helpful. And that is what I mean by a shift to a professional mindset. Because that's when you think of yourself as an independent legal professional, which you are, because you have obviously qualified and you have the right to practice and you have done the bar. And you are an independent legal professional who is capable of giving advice. And all the partner has on you is years of experience. So there's no reason to feel less or junior. And I think that professional mindset where you are actively providing legal services to your client makes a huge difference in how you approach your role within the law firm, which is why I think it is so, so incredibly important.
Yeah, I completely agree. And that mentality of thinking, okay, we're both qualified, one person just has more experience and that's the partner. That's a really interesting perspective, actually. Really, really interesting. Very impactful. So thank you for sharing. And then, you know, we've spoken a lot about what trainees and junior lawyers can do to, you know, help their careers and help their partners. But flipping it around, what do you think that partners could be doing more of to help their juniors flourish?
I absolutely love that question. Honestly, because I've given so much time to thinking about what kind of a partner I would want to be when, you know, a few years down the line, should I go down that road? And when I think about partners today and the kind of pressures that they have on their time, I think that there are a couple of things that partners can definitely do to help, you know, associates flourish their careers. One of them is trusting associates with more responsibility, irrespective of their title. There are so many times where, you know, you would have more senior associates who are obviously leading the bandwagon in terms of the kind of responsibilities of the case. And I think that is amazing. But if you are working on slightly smaller cases, I think it is important to give your junior associates more responsibility and also give them a little bit more grace in terms of the work that they hand in. Because sometimes partners tend to view the work that senior associates do and junior associates do with, you know, sort of an equal perspective. And I think that it just comes from the fact that you're reviewing that work on your email and you are looking at the aspects that need to be dealt with. And I think just giving feedback actively on the work that they're doing. And maybe the feedback does not have to come on every aspect of the work that junior associate is doing. Maybe that's asking for too much. But I do think that regular feedback, which goes beyond, you know, just the feedback that you would receive in your performance review, is incredibly important, because that's how you are able to help that associate grow on an ongoing basis, as opposed to, you know, that one, that annual feedback that you would get in your performance review, and also helps the associate not be surprised in their annual feedback. The other thing that they can do is include them and put them at the center of client interactions to the extent that is possible. There are a lot of client interactions where, you know, you might be dealing with certain aspects of the case that the junior associate is in charge of. And I have, that's one of the things I've absolutely loved in my career, that I have been given the opportunity to engage directly with the client and speak to them and be trusted with the responsibility to engage with them. And that has also obviously helped me grow in terms of building relationships and how to interact with people who are not a part of the legal world, right? And I think that knowing that language and that currency in which clients think and how they speak is incredibly important as a junior associate. And the other thing I would say, that I think a lot of, we are really not looking at partners as managers, but that's what they are. They are managing their teams. And I think that it is important to also be aware of what your management style is and communicate that very, very clearly to the associates that are with you, how you prefer to be contacted, in what format you want your work product to be delivered. Just, you know, having maybe a 30-minute coffee with an associate or your team of associates and explaining that this is how you like your work done is such an amazing way to help them manage expectations, but at the same time ensure that you get work delivered to you and, you know, your associates are flourishing in alignment with how you want them to flourish as well. So just knowing what your management style is and actively thinking about yourself as a manager is so important.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, just spending that extra time on explaining what your expectations are and then providing that feedback is undoubtedly going to help the juniors produce better work and therefore reduce frustrations and time spent on maybe correcting things. So I think there's definitely a good
investment. Absolutely.
Partners. Yeah. And so what are your top tips for business development? As you know, we always talk about the lawyering, but, you know, we're also business people as well. So it'd be interesting to hear your perspective on this.
Isn't that exciting? I think business development is such an exciting part of what an associate gets to do. And a lot of times, depending on the size of the firm that you are in, you might be led to believe that, you know, you should do business development at maybe a later stage in your career. But now associates are getting more and more active, and irrespective of the firm size that you're in, I truly believe that business development should start from day one. And it can start from within your firm, the relationships that you're building with the partners within your firm, If you don't know your team, just go ahead, knock on their door and introduce yourself, as opposed to waiting for them or waiting to be formally introduced. I'm actively attending events within your law firm because, you know, there are so many webinars that are organized or just small cluster events that are organized with law firms for knowledge development within the firm. I think it's a great place to do business development. And, you know, it's really about getting that kind of visibility. And in terms of what they can do outside the law firm as well, I think LinkedIn is a great place to sort of build a little bit of a personal brand for yourself and at least get that visibility for your profile. However, I think it's important to be extremely careful about what you are sharing on LinkedIn. And I always recommend that if you have someone in your organization, maybe HR or someone who actively deals with social media policies or maybe a BD manager, always contact them to make sure that the kind of content you are envisioning sharing on LinkedIn is in line with the firm's policies and you are not sharing any confidential information because we deal with so much confidential information. So LinkedIn is absolutely amazing in terms of what it can do for you. But at the same time, it's important to be mindful of your professional responsibilities to your practice and to your firm. And in terms of what you can do at conferences and events, I think it's a wonderful thing to be able to, you know, go to a conference that's happening locally. But I think sometimes we focus too much as junior associates on going to the conferences where it's just lawyers who are meeting. One of the things I have started doing recently is going to events that are hosted by business chambers or chambers of commerce and, you know, building an engagement with them to get a sense of the kind of businesses that are involved with these chambers. Because it's, I think it's a great way to sort of be able to advocate for your practice as well. And in the event that I'm at a legal conference or conference that deals with arbitration, I would typically gravitate towards, you know, more junior colleagues. Just because I think they're more amenable to building a relationship as opposed to partners who are, you know, in a different headspace at those conferences. And I have been able to, you know, build a network of these junior colleagues and junior associates, and whether that's trainees or junior associates within the city and outside the city as well, just because of having those conversations with them. So I think finding platforms that give you that space to interact with people, I think, are so important. So, for instance, there is something called an arbitration lunch match where, you know, this is for this is run by an organization called Arbitral Women, where four or six women who are arbitration practitioners are put on a blind lunch date. And it's such a fantastic idea. And you get to do this once or twice a year where you get to interact with other female practitioners in your city. And so there are a lot of events that happen by organizations that you might not necessarily think of as your first goal. But I think it's a great idea to sort of think outside the box and find places where you can interact with people who maybe don't do what you do, as opposed to finding people who do what you do. And I hope that's helpful.
Really helpful. And I think it's also, I like the way that you spoke about internal networking and networking within the firm as well as externally as well. I was just reflecting the other day on a time when, you know, in my firm, we have several offices in different locations. And because I had put in effort to, well, speak to people in other offices as well, when I needed something urgently, I was able to contact them really quickly. Whereas if I hadn't
built that
network, then it would have maybe been a more lengthy process. So I can definitely resonate with that. And also that when you said about we're really good at building networks with other lawyers. And again, I'm definitely guilty of that. I think all my LinkedIn connections are 99.9% lawyers.
Mine used to be until fairly recently. I think it's just something that you can be easily so mindful of.
Yeah.
And when it comes to your firm, I think we don't realize how you have this group of colleagues who are easily available to you. So, you know, I mean, when you're looking at colleagues in other practice areas as well, I think it's wonderful. There are sometimes colleagues that I would network with in my French class when we do group classes, just because, you know, I have other associates from other practice areas. So really, networking can happen anywhere. And I think just being conscious about what you want from your networking process, how you want to build visibility and investing the time in doing that, I think can be incredibly helpful for your career.
Really helpful. Thank you so much. And so if you could go back in time and give yourself one piece of advice at the start of your career, what would that be?
Wow. So I like to think that I have not had that long a career, and I keep giving myself advice literally every year when I set my annual goals. But if I have to go back to myself in law school and give myself advice, I think one of the things I would tell myself is start building a personal brand as soon as possible. And I don't just mean a personal brand on LinkedIn. I also mean a personal brand in terms of how I want to hold myself out as a professional when I'm interacting with my colleagues within the firm, when I'm interacting with non-lawyers outside the firm, and what kind of how I see myself as a professional. I think giving that thought to it would have been incredibly helpful, especially given that today personal brands matter a lot. And in terms of, you know, how authentic you are and how you build trust with other people has become an extremely important factor in whether people want to work with you or not, especially given how global our world is. The second thing that I would tell myself is that, you know, working in a law firm and getting that first job is only the beginning of the mountain. And there is so much that you should do to keep investing in your career year after year. And irrespective of whether you get those opportunities internally, whether your firm organizes something for advocacy, whether that firm organizes something for knowledge, I think there are so many events that are so many, you know, just spaces where you can build your expertise and your skills. And that investment is upskilling is what I would tell myself, because I think in my first year, I was a little lazy in this area of my professional life because I had so much work to focus on. And that's obviously an important part of what you do. But making that time for upskilling and building your brand and, you know, doing a certain amount of business development, don't think of it as a nice to have. Think of it as a must have. So I think those are things that I would definitely tell myself. And there was actually one thing that I did tell myself that I'm very grateful for. So when I started my career as an associate, I told myself that I chose this career. And so I'm not going to let the stress of my work and my job pass on to my family and my friends. And I'm so grateful I did that, because anytime I get a call from my mother or I get a call from a friend, I make sure that I switch off my lawyer hat. And instead of, you know, constantly talking about how difficult my life is or how time consuming the work is, I actually have built relationships that have, you know, that have given me that emotional satisfaction that I think is so important when you're working as a lawyer. Because there is so much work that you do that is just emotionally and, you know, physically draining in terms of how many hours you're working. So I'm glad I have taken that advice. I didn't know how it would have turned out because I'm experimenting with it. But now that I'm on the other side of it, I think it's one of the wisest things I have done.
Honestly, that advice is just incredible. I really am going to have to listen back to this after it's released and just make so many notes, because I'm just so inspired by your journey and all the things that you've done. It's fantastic, and, you know, really excited to you know, continue following you and hearing more of what you have to say. So thank you so much for coming on this podcast today.
That's so kind of you, Camilla. If you don't mind, I have a couple of book recommendations for junior associates and trainees that I would love to share through your podcast. I spoke about having an entrepreneurial mindset.
Yeah.
And that obviously, to my mind, was, you know, really comes from this book, which is known as The Startup of You. Mm-hmm. It's actually written by the founder of LinkedIn, whose name is Reid Hoffman, and Ben Casnocha.
Okay.
So that's my first recommendation. And the second one I recommend is a book which is known as The Essential Associate by Jay Harrington.
Okay.
Jay Harrington is amazing. He posts regularly on LinkedIn. And he's also somebody I recommend following because he gives amazing advice on how to market yourself and how to do business development. And I've always found his posts very, very helpful.
Yeah. I've seen him on LinkedIn. Yeah.
Right? And he posts really regularly, and he also has his own blog. In terms of, I think he also has another book, which is known as The Productivity Pivot, which I've not read as so far. But the essential associate has been extremely helpful in terms of, you know, getting a sense of what kind of an associate I want to be. And it's been a very, I thought it could be a helpful resource for our community out there.
Absolutely. I'm going to leave details to those books in the show notes for this episode so that our listeners can go and hopefully just, you know, check those out if they're interested. And where can listeners connect with you online?
I think LinkedIn is the perfect place to reach me because I always have it on my phone. I post regularly and my LinkedIn messages are open to anybody who would like to reach out. And I'm always happy to have a conversation. One-on-one conversations is actually one of my favorite style of meeting people. I would love to set up something if you are interested in having a chat. So please reach out and I look forward to hearing from you.
Fantastic. I'll leave the link to your LinkedIn in the description box of the podcast as well, so people will know exactly where to find you. But thank you again, Tania, for coming on the show. It's been an absolute pleasure to have you on. And I'm sure the listeners will have gotten so much from this episode. So thank you again.
Thank you so much. I have absolutely enjoyed this experience speaking with you. It's been an absolutely wonderful conversation. And I hope that, you know, in my own little way, I have been able to help somebody out there and create an impact in the way that I was hoping to create. But again, I think you are doing such a wonderful job with the Student Lawyer podcast. And it's absolutely lovely to be here. So thank you so much for having me.
Thank you. And thank you to all of the listeners as well for tuning in. And we will see you in the next one. Goodbye.
To hear more of the Student Lawyers podcast, hit the subscribe button and leave us a star rating and review. If you would like to join the Student Lawyer as a writer, please email hello@thestudentlawyer.com.